My name is Lila, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Sandy. I just knew we met in the bathroom. I couldn't remember the exact details, but I'll tell you what happened in Dallas. The three times in the bathroom, it's the same time that I was in that bathroom, I also ran into another woman who explained that the whole psychological nature of cows to me, that they're so stupid, you have to punch them to knock them out. I didn't get it all, but right then, Sandy came in, and she was a bootmaker. And, you know, I don't know what happens, but along the way, if you're lucky enough, and I hope you are, to have the length of time and enjoyment and growth and good and bad times and sobriety that Marty and I have had for the last 30-plus years. I wish you that, as I do everybody in the room. I mean, that's what it's about. And you're going to meet all kinds of people. But every now and then, somebody's just going to stand out, and you're not even going to know why. And so we left Dallas, Texas, talking about Sandy the bootmaker. And then I don't know what happened, but a couple of years later, we talked to Sandy the bootmaker on the phone, and then Sandy the bootmaker moved to Phoenix, and Sandy the bootmaker, Sandy the bootmaker. You know, and suddenly she's like a member of our family, and Jane and I, oh yeah, Sandy the bootmaker. Do you know Sandy the bootmaker? Ah, she's a Phoenix. You know, we run into Ray in San Diego, and yeah, Sandy the bootmaker, and you know. And actually, your speaker this evening was supposed to be Christine H., and she is not today well enough to be here, and I never fill in for anybody. What am I going to in this Hallmark moment with Chris? She wouldn't even appreciate it. We're too good of friends. I mean, are we kidding? You know. I give her name, she gives mine, we hope nobody calls us, you know, and that's really what happened. But anyway, Tony called, and I got a message, and he left a very nice message on the machine about speaking in Phoenix, Arizona. And I said, oh, God, you know, I just can't do that. And, you know, Ray had assured them that I wasn't going to be able to do it, and he was right, really. And then I called back Tony to tell him, well, just can't do it. I mean, how many conventions can a human being do? And blah, blah, blah. And as much as this was one of my favorite years ago, sorry. I just, you know, and I'm like spending extra time on how I'm going to say no. Because I really like Phoenix, and I liked being here when Richie with the little bow tie was the co-chair and Ray, and seeing a number of people that I've had the opportunity to run into, and it's just been a pleasure. And it was hard for me. And then this woman, Sue, answers the phone, and because they were moving pilings or something, I don't know. And she said, and by the way, do you know that I live with someone that you might know? Well, who could that be? Sandy the bootmaker. Oh, God. So I said, Jane, she lives with Sandy the bootmaker. And Jane said, well, I guess we're going to Phoenix, Arizona. You know, but there is a God, and there must be great humor in that other world of great reality and creative intelligence and everything that they talk about in the book, because, you know, she just got me back for trapping her in the bathroom there in Dallas all those years ago. I'm delighted to be here. I'm having a great time. You know, I don't care how long you're sober, life will always present you with, you know, just little moments where you get tired or you work too hard or enough things happen that bother you. And, you know, the great benefit of sobriety and having some knowledge of how the program works after a while and working the steps and just hanging out with the turtle hat. I mean, do you know the amount of confidence it takes to wear that hat? You have an idea. I mean, I may be sober 3.5 months longer than she is, but I would not wear the hat. You know? I don't even want to know what that answer was. I lost my train of thought. I just think of all the hats she has. This is the turtle hat. There's a trout hat and a real fish. It sticks out both ends. So when we go to conventions, I just look for the lady in the hat. You don't have to worry about what I look like or you look like. She'll be there. There'll be a hat. You will not miss her, okay? She's going to have the hat on. How did we get to that? Anyway. So no matter what happens, you'll have all these little challenges in your life. And what sobriety and the steps. I mean, you can have a lot of sobriety and no serenity. So let's not equate sobriety and sanity. Right away, they do not equate. Now, sobriety, God, and serenity, that equates. So, you know, the more practice and effort you put into your own program after you're about 10 or 15 or 20 years sober when you have to, you know, then, you know, there's this broad highway. And you know, and all that happens on the broad highway is that you find out that there's little rest stops that you never saw for maybe 5, 10, 15, for in my case, 18 years of my sobriety. Never saw the rest stops, you know, where you go and pause and maybe have a little moment with God, you know. But eventually you find that there's little rest stops. And this weekend has been one of those for me. I mean, it's just been a pleasant time for me to be here. And Jane and I have had an opportunity not only to spend some time with some good friends that you would think that you spend time with when they live in your own neighborhood, area, city, town. But you don't. Life is so busy. We don't pause. So it's just been a pleasure for that. And then to see people that I haven't seen and then to relax. But I have to tell you, it was fun tonight at that table. Okay, Sandy, I don't know if you know, I might as well break her anonymity in every respect. Sandy Kay was a bootmaker. Now she's no longer, well, she probably still is, but she doesn't practice the full profession of bootmaking at the moment. She is, however, a professional auctioneer. And we were set up at that table to buy those tickets. I mean, we were pulling money out of our wallets and throwing it at the woman. How many more do you have to go, Sandy? How many more do you... Oh, my God. Okay, so you can add up. There's a lot of my friends. You can, there's got to be a couple of hundred years of sobriety at that table, and we were nuts over there, I'm telling you. And then when poor Cynthia wanted to start the thing, it was us that went mad because it wasn't fair. Have a... Somebody says at the table, have a group conscience, for God's sake. You can't start. Our tickets aren't in there. But I suppose as the memories fade and all the things go away and, you know, still got a birdhouse with a, you know, beautiful yellow license plate on it and still is from Sonora, which is close to Superior, I think, in Phoenix. So that's really meaningful. And she's got a patio now in her new place that she can put that, you know. And Phyllis and Charlotte, well, we paid for it, okay? We paid a fortune for these things, but... we don't even know who must pay what, but... I mean, the money was flying across the table. How many more, Sandy? 10, 20, 30. And she's, like, got it all handled. It was unbelievable. It's a setup is what it is, a setup. Spiritual setup. And Phyllis and Shauna got a little angel thing. But the thing that I'm never going to forget, and gosh willing, I'm sober a long, another 30 years. I mean, it's possible in this world that that could happen, you know, and... Can you imagine an Alcoholics Anonymous that they would end up having to, you know, have people that could possibly be sober? There's people sitting in this room tonight that could see, you know, 60, 70, 80 years of sobriety. It's extraordinary with the young people coming into Alcoholics Anonymous that would be celebrating 60, 70, 80 years. I hope Marty and I are there to do that. But one of the memories that will never fade for me, because it has never happened to me, and I can't imagine that it would ever happen again, is that Marty won a woman. First of all, we're, you know, if anybody ever thinks that sober people don't have fun, you know, I mean, and then Lori, what courage to auction herself off to this mad group of people. It's amazing to me. And then, you know, Marty wins her. Suddenly we're thinking that hip probably won't be a problem on the way home tomorrow. But, you know, I'll tell you, not only the maturity of age, but the maturity of sobriety. You know, Lori said to her, what are you going to do with me? And Marty said, well, let me think about that. Whereupon all the other people jumped in and had a lot of suggestions that I just could not possibly let go out on tape. It would just be awful to say. So I don't know where you're sitting, Lori, but...
Right here.
Oh, yeah? I've known Marty for 30 years. You are in for a really nice time. Don't let that hat fool you for 1 second. I think it stays on all the time. Oh, God. Never too late, Marty. It's never too late. What the hell has this got to do with Alcoholics Anonymous? You know what? It's got everything to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it's about living. It's about life. You're through drinking if you're in this room tonight and you don't have a bottle in your hip pocket. You're finished. It is over. It says right at the beginning of the literature in the AA, you have recovered. Finished. Finale. Done. If you drink again, you will make that decision stone cold sober. You will not be able to blame anybody for it. A bottle of scotch will not come flying out of the sky, hit your arm, and go down your throat. Just not going to happen. You're supposed to be here. You're supposed to have fun. You're supposed to laugh. You're supposed to live. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to teach you to do. That's what it's for. And when it's all said and done, you know, and everybody has their opinion, but that's what it says in the book. You know, they hear these guys as a practically, well, there's 40 of them actually, and then they got to 100. Do you realize that the longest length of sobriety was 4 years? And that was Wilson when the book was written. You know, and then 13 or so years later, when the most sobriety that could be was 17, 18, the 12 and 12 was written. Well, now it's perfectly logical to me why that happened. Because, you know, the big book is so divinely inspired and so simple. It had to be divinely inspired. I mean, you can't put two of us, sober alcoholics, in a room and come up with an answer that we both agree upon, let alone 40 to 100 people who managed to, like, get this thing out. Do you know? Get this thing out. And it was no surprise to me that the 12 and 12 was written those years later, because they realized, what are we going to do with all these people now that they're sober? In the world are we going to do with them? They're sober 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 15, 16, and at that time 17, 18 years. Oh, my God. Way beyond anyone's imagination that we would still be here, that alcoholics would be here, Alcoholics Anonymous. So Bill Wilson, being a man who had to stay 1 foot ahead of his depression the entire time, you know, the entire time, he had to write a book for people like me. I wouldn't be sober today if I did not, in the 18th or 17th year, 15th, whatever, of my sobriety, renew my relationship, not only with the big book, but with the 12 and 12. If you're over 5 years sober and you don't have an intimate relationship with the 12 and 12, you're missing something. You don't have to do anything. Lots of people don't. But if you'd like more, it's there for you. I don't know what kind of alcoholic you are, but I know what kind I am. I wanted it all. 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 And that's the kind of sober person I am. I want it all. Don't wait as long as I waited to take advantage of what is so freely given about how to live life on a spiritual basis in Alcoholics Anonymous. And even if you do, and if you're sitting out there with 18, 20, 25, or whatever years of sobriety, do it today. It's so big. It's so huge. All that ever happened to those people when they first joined Alcoholics Anonymous at the beginning is they stopped drinking. And then they ran around because there was no, forget gay AA. Forget it. There was like no AA, practically. I mean, the meetings were hours you had to drive. There had to be that community. There had to be that over-exaggerated description of one-on-one. You know, those people got sober without the big book. There was no big book. The 12 and 12 was a distant spiritual coming memory, you know, the coming event. All they had was one drunk talking to another, and they had a huge religious implication to that. Because it came out of the Oxford group, you know, and they would I mean, Dr. Bob would drag them upstairs and throw them on their knees at the bed. If that ever happened to me, I wouldn't be sitting here. I would think, oh, for God's sake, you know. It just wouldn't have worked. But again, it was divinely inspired. In the big book, you know, people say, oh, it's so, well, you know, white male Christian book. Well, you know, I used to think that. And I could prove that to you by looking at it. But now you know what? It's a huge book. It's broad. You know, the second story in the book is about a woman. She's dead, right? I mean, I have to make sure. Anyway, she's gay. In case it never came out. Yes, the woman, what is this? Some women suffer too. Oh, I don't know if I should be saying this, but what the hell, right? You don't know, and you should. It's Marty Marty M., not this Marty. The one that pretended she didn't want a woman. But if you read the story, women's, you'll find out that she went out for breakfast or something, but I don't know, I'm making the names up now because I can't remember them exactly, with Joan. And then she ended up later on that evening with Ruth. Now, think about that for one second. Any practicing alcoholic woman, gay, lesbian, knows what that means. But the great news is that the first story about the woman, the woman was a gay woman. The woman was a lesbian. The woman was right there at the beginning of the ride in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, the story about the meeting that they had, you know, in New York City, it was wonderful. You probably all know the stories, don't you, about Marty Mann and everything. But it's wonderful to know that woman was there. And then they talk about creative intelligence and spirit of the universe and grace reality and friend. I mean, they call God friend in the big book. Doesn't sound too, you know, whatever to me, because if it was too Christian, I couldn't deal with it. You know, I grew up in Ireland with the nuns. There's going to be one talking tomorrow. I'll be very careful now. I don't know if she's here. Just tuned in here. Just had a conscious moment. I'm not going to say anything about nuns. Oh, God, I have to censor so much. But I find this book to be exactly how it's stated, that it's all-inclusive, not exclusive, and it's for everybody and all kinds of people. And I lost my train of thought. Not good what's going on in here. Anyway, Marty Mann. And the other thing that I think is interesting that you might like to know, if you don't know, and I think a workshop in Dallas and not in Phoenix that I heard this thing in. But there was a little meeting, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is right at the beginning when AA had just begun. They had just, like, you know, they finally opened the meeting in New York City. And you might know this now, Chuck. And they had, there's a small little group of men in there. Bill Wilson had gone back to his place where he lived with Lois. And a guy comes to the door. He's a heroin addict. He's wearing red beaded gown. He is wearing a red beaded gown. He's got the wig on. He's happening. Heroin addict, transvestite, knocks on the door of Alcoholics Anonymous. If Alcoholics Anonymous was a year old, it was not even. And they didn't know what the hell to do with this guy. Now, the real story is, I don't know what they print, because, you know, there's always the real story. And I know a guy that's sober 48 years that knew Bill Wilson, that tells me the real story. The real story is that they don't know what the hell to do. So they find a phone and they call Wilson, Bill Wilson. They say, get down here. We have this situation. You know, we have a situation. They should see this room about situations. So they call Bill Wilson and they are like, they don't know what to do. And the guy is standing outside on the sidewalk waiting for the decision. And Bill Wilson flies down the street and he sees the beaded gown. And he realizes this must be the situation. So he walks in and he says to them, does he have a desire to stop drinking? Yes. Well, then he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then the guy went on to stay, remain sober, and as we all know, was very, very effective in 12-step work in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't hear a lot about that, but obviously Where would he go to do the work? And where would he find the other people? I'm sure he wouldn't go into, like, you know, Daly's Bar. He would be down there wherever, I don't know, heroin addict, drunk, alcoholic, transvestites go. You might know where these places are. I have no idea. But I'm sure that there was a big net that went out and there were all kinds of people just like us. And I sometimes think that it's an obligation of those of us that have been told those stories that perhaps we should pass them on so that you really know how extraordinarily big it is that this many of you, gay and lesbian, men and women, whatever, are in this room tonight celebrating, laughing, and enjoying yourselves. It's huge. You can thank the guy in the red dress that you don't even know. You know? I wonder if the guy made boots. I mean, you have no... You know, the guy that I was mentioning to you, I attend a meeting with him almost most Sundays that I can. And when there's the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And there's also something called the 12 concepts, which I hope that you take the time in your sobriety to really look at, and that is how the 12 steps about the business of how to find your God and how to live, and the traditions of how we live as a group of people, common unity, and the 12 concepts about how the business of Alcoholics Anonymous and the organization of Alcoholics Anonymous functions. And there's 12 concepts and probably some of the best writing that he may have ever done. You can get it if you become a GSR or General Service Representative. I didn't rush right out and do that. I did it when I was sober a long time. It was a horrific experience. But, you can't say, if you don't have experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't believe you should talk about it, you know. So I had to do that so that I could be critical. Actually, it's an extraordinary thing. Somebody's got to do the work. And now they're in the process of rewriting, you know, the fourth edition of the big book. And maybe in my lifetime it'll come out. I don't know. It'll take a long time. But they're changing some of the stories. But I have the funny feeling that women suffer too will still be in there, and in deference to, you know, Marty Mann and the first woman. So there's lots of women in the big book. They put the first 100 men in there, you know, the first 100 men. And there was a huge big issue about, well, where are the women? And I don't know, they got women got half a concession at that time on that. I think it says in the book the men, but in some other literature it says men and women. So it's really interesting, the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm touched by it when I particularly come to a gay convention, because, you know, from 40 guys to 100 to 2 million books being printed to the last time I even looked at the thing, 94 countries all over the world. I mean, you can't go anywhere now without running into Alcoholics Anonymous pretty much, although Venice, we were in Venice not too long ago and we couldn't find an English-speaking meeting, and that was a whole big drama, you know. I like spent 2 days complaining about that, but so I do not complain, but didn't do much. 94 countries, and they have the big book in all of these languages. I mean, Swahili, and it's just extraordinary. This organization that we belong to is so much bigger than who we are, you know, who we are, and it's great. You know, I like to remember that. I like to be, because it humbles me. It humbles me. It doesn't make me feel insignificant, because I don't believe I'm insignificant anymore. But it makes me feel equal size to everyone else. And that's really a huge feeling from someone that spent most of their mental time on the bathroom floor. You know, that's where I began my spiritual journey, was on the bathroom floor. But that's not necessarily a true statement. Perhaps that's how where I began my spiritual journey in my sober life. It took me to my sober life. But I believe that my spiritual journey began before I was even born, because I have been protected by something, somewhere, somehow, from the day I was a thought. And I probably said, I'll take those people. They drink. I liked it. I'd like to be born in Ireland. At some point, I'd like to live over a pub. Those are probably my requirements for coming back. I'd like to have at least a few years of serious alcoholic drinking before I have to get sober. Whoever makes these decisions in the other universe, the spiritual universe of all time, said, well, she can have that, but let's give her the Blessed Virgin reincarnate as a mother, the father for a drunk, and six brothers and sisters just because she's arrogant. But now I can see really can see a bigger picture. I mean, now that I have a sense, and it's taken all these years, that's why I talk about my experience taking so long, and it doesn't have to for you, but it's only really, I would say, in the last 12 or 13 years that I feel that God is inside of me rather than outside of me. And since the more I make room for this God, the more I'm willing to do this magical thing in the book that talks about receiving and making room for God, and that's what it's all about. The more I do that, the more I'm aware that this God thing is huge and has been with me the whole time. And now I can look back and I can see when I was protected when I was little. And it doesn't mean that I did not have, in my opinion, some horrific events occur in my life. But I survived them. I have been protected. I have survived them. I have survived all of it. I have survived life and death and incest and seeing things and hearing things and observing things that no one should hear, see, or observe. And I have survived it. It's an extraordinary thing to know that I have survived. How do I know? Well, I'm here. I'm in front of the train. I am not waiting for it to run me over. I'm the conductor. It's huge. It's huge. Somebody had to be helping me do that. It sure as hell wasn't me. I was self-royal, run riot. I was protected all this time. I now know that it makes sense. I can look back, and I've just begun, for fun almost, connecting the dots of my life, where, you know, I can look back and I can see where something happened that now makes sense here, that's beginning to make sense here, that's beginning to make sense here, and that person said that, that connects to that. I think, oh my God, it's like looking at the night sky in Phoenix, beautiful, clear night with all those stars, and there's a line that just connects and it describes my life. And it's no longer frightening to me. And that's what's become of my venture in Alcoholics Anonymous, that as I look at AA and I look at my life in it and I continue to walk this step and do these steps that take me through these inventories, I'm beginning to understand the kaleidoscope of my own life and the magic and the beauty of it and the colors and the people and the gifts that I have been given, like Jane and good friends like Sylvia and Marcy and Phyllis and Shona. I mean, it's just amazing. And it's just like probably this big in a kaleidoscope that could fill up the whole room. I've just begun. I'm in my 50s, never mind where exactly, but I am in my 50s. You know, I'm over 30 years sober, and I am on a roll. You know, it's amazing. Now, the unfortunate part about this role is that I don't know where I'm going. I don't know when, how, where. I've been waiting for years. You know, I no longer work. I changed my whole entire life right after I spoke in Phoenix, actually, the last time. Everything changed. And I mean everything. Scary speaking here. Everything. Everything. I wish you that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wish you that. I wish you three or four lifetimes while you're here for this journey. I wish you that. And it can happen. It can happen. And it's all because somewhere way back, when I was a practicing alcoholic, a drunk, a woman drunk, a lesbian woman drunk, I must have, in a state of unconsciousness, been desperate for help. Been desperate. I used to think that the big prayers came when I first joined Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think so. The beginning of the conscious prayers, perhaps. And then I went to a state of unconsciousness for about 10 years of my sobriety. Happens. You know, just don't drink. You'll hang in there. And you've got to go to meetings, or for sure, you know, you'll drink. And God was there, but only when necessary. And the Band-Aid God I had for a lot of years, you know, and I had that God that you get when you do step one, you know, the powerless God, and then you say, oops, need step two for God, and then you jump right to four, and, you know, you look at five, and then you just run to eight and nine, and then you hit 12 and do a bunch of 12-step work and put up coffee and stuff, and that's it. You can stay sober that way. I know people that just do one and 12. They're full of shit, but they just do one and 12. I know a bunch of people that do 1, 4, 5, 8, 9, and sometimes 12. Then they tell you that the only way to do the inventory is in the book. You know they've only done it once. You know they don't know what they're talking about. The way you do the inventory is the way your sponsor tells you to do it. You know? And you hope to God they know. Then you'll hear them talk and they'll say, just like it's in the book. They do it the way their sponsor told them to do it. That's how it is. Don't forget, the beginning, there was no book. There was no way. There was no 12 and 12. There were just people desperate to get rid of the sickness inside of them, desperate, that had been praying while they were drunk and they didn't even know it. If they're anything like me, I came off that bathroom floor out of blackouts, raging like a bull elephant in a rage because I heard myself say, God, help me. Couldn't believe it. I did not need anybody's help. Well, I can look back now, and that's exactly what God did. I mean, maybe not that exact minute, but a series of events that I can see so clearly began to happen in my life. And bingo! Where do I end up? At a place called the Hole in the Ground in Huntington Park, California. It is exactly what it sounds like. They did not have all their teeth. You know. But I only saw the people that I thought were different. Little blood in the ears. I used to think that they would go up to the nearest prison and pick up all the death row people and bring them to that meeting and then sit them at this table and then they would talk. Hairy with big silver buckles and named Tex. And we're not talking Texas here, we're talking California, okay? It's totally different. Big buckles are not in there. They were never in. But they're big and they have stagecoaches and cats and dogs and horses and everything. I know because I was so wiped out when I first joined Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't hear a word they were saying. It was gibberish to me. And I was still having the, you know, I had the DTs when I got sober. And there wasn't an abundance of treatment centers. So, you know, we like threw up and hung out in the meetings. Somebody throws up in a meeting, now, oh, my God. Then it was like, whoops. So, whoa. They used to have this deal where, you know, they put all the newcomers in the front. I, honest to God, I believe this because they cared. You know, that they really wanted us all there right in the front row because, you know, you get the message and you can't. No. Throw up on each other. They say, go sit where the newcomers sit. Where do the newcomers sit? Wherever you see a big book, we mark the spots. Just where you sit. I never got a full cup of coffee for 6 or 7 months. They would only give you half a cup of coffee. I used to think, gee, why don't they let us pour our own coffee? That old guy gets to pour his coffee, the old bastard. What is he even doing here? That's what I was really thinking. Who is he? What is he here for? He wears a suit. Sure, white shirt. You know, they were either wearing suits every day, day and night, 24 hours a day. Like Marty's hat, always there. Or their name was Tex, and they had these big buckles with those shirts with little trims and stuff, you know, and rolled up. Or T-shirts, if they really were beginning to buff up when they first got sober right out of prison. They'd be wearing big T-shirts with 5,200 tattoos. Those were the nicest guys. They were the most nuts and the most nice, I must say. The Tex guys were good. They would just say, hi, little gal. Jesus. I mean, I was already, you know, I was actually like dragging my leg when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, high level gal could knock me across a room. And like one good leg, one bad leg, I was frozen on one side of my body, and this guy slapping me on the back like it's a party. Oh, unbelievable. But the prisoners, I mean, they kind of knew, and they were real prisoners. I mean, Now you can't really talk about a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous. You could be subpoenaed. It's a problem. But then they would sit up there and talk about, you know, stuff. Bang, bang. Gone. I mean, I had nothing to do with this stuff, you know. I mean, I drank and the cops were Irish and I would sing Danny Boy and we'd all cry and now. Oh, God. It's gone away now, but I used to have, when I get really tired or really drunk, I would have one of those, well, my brogue would come back, a thick, thick Irish brogue, and you know, my God, they were crying and talking about their mothers and all. Jesus. It was, I should be taking them home. So, I mean, that was probably the extent. I was just up there, I had not completed yet the yet portion of my alcoholism. I was right on the verge, you know, but these were these wonderful guys, and the reason I know that is because when the guy wasn't hitting you on the back, knocking your way across the room, you know, then Duke was over at the coffee pot pouring the half cups for the newcomers. Why? Because, you know, if you had your cup in your hand, they didn't want you spilling on them. I mean, it was really logical. And then they would have jelly donuts. This is like 8:30 at night. The meetings would be 8:30 to 10, and you had to get there early. And I did this. I did this. I came off a bathroom floor, and before I knew it, I was drinking a half a cup of coffee that could take your teeth out of your head. I was with a predominantly male group. They were all straight. I'm being slapped around by techs. Duke is taking care of me with the big book. And the prisoners and I are shaking out in the front row, trying not to throw up on each other. That was my introduction, and I'm getting dressed to go to the meeting. I was so insecure and so less than in my own little mind that I got dressed in my most expensive whatever to go to this meeting. Like it mattered. I actually had a guy throw up on my shoe. I could not believe it. Now, the fact that I had thrown up on their bathroom wall and walked out of there like it was an everyday occurrence didn't faze me. Until Duke made me go in there and say, look, you know, that's what it's for. But you were the last one in there. I said, I don't think that's mine. Lie, 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 lie. They just said, stay sober no matter what. They didn't say, be honest. Nothing else. Just stay sober no matter what. We don't care what you do as long as you stay sober. Okay, fine. Boo. Not me. I tried to blame it on the guy that stuttered, but it wouldn't go over. And you know, the interesting thing about the stutter is I stuttered too. I had a profound and deep stutter when I joined Alcoholics Anonymous because I was so terrified and so frightened as a sober person. I would sit in that room and I would feel the hair grow on my head. I sweat all the time. You know, I could never understand too. Then they put us in a line at the door. And you walk down the 12 steps into the hole in the ground, and we'd be there. And they'd say, okay, shake the hands of every single person that comes in. Fine, fine. And it wasn't always the newcomers. I mean, they were all, you know, whoever. They'd just pick three random people. But they'd always pick one of us. And everybody that would walk in that door would say, hi, John. Hi, Harry. Oh, hi. You must be new, they would say to me. I couldn't figure out why they knew that. I was sober about a year. And I come in, and I shake somebody's hand, and I practically had, I drowned in the hand. It was so much perspiration. I thought, that's how they know. I said, hi, you're new, aren't you? It was tremendous. And then I graduated to being able to pour the coffee. And they had these huge jelly donuts. I mean, they don't have them anymore. In California, we actually have some meetings that have carrots in them. How do you get sober on a carrot stick? Would you see? Celery and a dip. Clearly, there's like somebody's like running out the alcoholics. Must be out of hospitals and very healthy because we would not have lasted. We were required to eat a jelly donut before the meeting started so that our sugar wouldn't drop and we wouldn't have a seizure in the meeting. And I mean, that's really how it was. I mean, there's people that will tell you, this is the truth. I am not exaggerating at all. Even though I'm Irish, I am not exaggerating at all. You know, you had to get there early to have your little... I used to think it was so you could have coffee and a little social moment. No, that's part of the benefits. But it's so that you can have your coffee and the donut. So that you have sugar in you. So that you don't go out, you know, down on the floor. I saw a guy once. A guy's on the floor, he's having a seizure. Another guy steps over and pours a cup of coffee. It was years before I got it that just because we got sober doesn't mean anything changed. Now, I had seen crap like that happen in bars. But it happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to get a cup of coffee. Excuse me. But somebody else ran out of that little side room and dragged him in by their legs and, you know, put the spoon in the... It was nothing for us. That's how it was. It was just the way that it was. How did that happen to me? How did I get from the bathroom floor to this position and I stayed? And I had no intention of staying. I was only going to stay... Christ, is that much time gone by? All right, we got to cut out this drunk-a-log stuff here. It's over. That's it. Hey, I wouldn't be myself if I didn't go into the step thing. You have to do the God and step thing. You know, you can't be sober 30 years and not talk about God. And if you do, not something, I don't know what. For me, let me just speak about myself. I really believe in the steps. Bottom line is, that was it in the hole in the ground. I never left. I prayed to get there. I prayed before I got drunk, went before I got sober, to obviously get sober. I didn't say, I would like to get sober. I just said, help. Unconsciously. I end up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I realize I'm a raging alcoholic, paralyzed, dragging my foot, throwing up on people, in this room, eating jelly donuts, hoping to God that the prisoners are telling the truth. Hoping to God that this look that's in their eyes is real. Believing that they too are just like me and I'm just like them and we got a shot at this thing. Shaking with other people. Loving them because I was a lesbian. I told them that so they kicked me out. I tried everything to get kicked out of there. I didn't have the courage to leave on my own. I knew I was an alcoholic, I'd die. Or worse, I wouldn't die. I just go under a bridge somewhere or something. Do you know what I mean? That's what happens to women alcoholics. I mean, you don't die. I mean, I was half dead, but I wasn't dead. Probably last a lot of years out there, dragging along. I mean, where are we going? Where is there to go from here? Nowhere. Nowhere. And they didn't know any lesbians at the time. So, but a friend of a friend of a friend knew a lesbian. And, of course, all these old guys talked about me, and they figured, well, you know, they didn't kick me out. They just said, so what? Jesus, what's that got to do with it? Sit down, shut up, and listen. Great. And sit in the front row again. Clearly, you're a regressing. Have you read the book? Does it say anything about kicking out lesbians? No. We believe in the big book. It doesn't say kick them out. Says everybody, all of you. I said, well, furthermore, you got to know I don't like God. I especially don't like your God. Well, which God do you think we have? Well, you have like Jesus. Forget it. I think Jesus is up there and Mary and all of them. Anthony, in fact, I've seen them drunk, so I know they're there. But I just think they're highly evolved. You know, I've studied Judaism and Buddhism and all the other guys too, and Allah and who have you. And I just think they're like good PR and they're highly evolved. So, but they're not the big ticket by any means. That better not be it, because I already used up all my credits there. Done. He said, well, I don't know what God you think I have, but it's my God. And you need one, and you need one bad. So you better use anybody's God you can find. I said, I'll take an angel. Angel. And I had this big 6-foot angel with these gigantic. Wait a minute. I hope this tape like doesn't pan out, because this is going to be really embarrassing to my latest repertoire out there, but scattered all over the place. But and this big angel with these huge giant wings. And this angel and I went to meetings for a year. And I ate a donut and the angel ate a donut. And I made a little bit of room on the right, and they threw up on the angel. I was, gee, angel. And crazy people, and I'm doing AA. And before I know it, I'm praying. And I'm praying to try to make it. And I'm praying to stay sober. And I'm praying for the crazy people to leave my head. And I'm praying for the 18 voices to stop. And I'm praying for the noise at night to go away. And I'm praying that some night, sometime, maybe, like other sober people, I will be able to sleep with all the lights off. And I'm praying that maybe I can move back into the bedroom, out of the living room, and I won't be so frightened. And I'm praying that I won't have to barricade my door and I live by myself. And I'm praying about all these things. And I'm praying that, you know, I can make it. And that I'm going to be okay. And that I'm really not a phony. And that it's going to be fine. And that I'm going to be fine. And that I can make it. And it's going to be okay. And I'm praying and I'm praying and I'm praying. And little did I know that those prayers then made me who I am today. You know, I wasn't even praying for anything. Anything. And then I get sober for a while, and the angel goes off to live with somebody else. You know, they're free and non-denominational, and they just... used to be Catholic, but I evolved and discussed the Catholic thing with the angel and said, look, it's over. I have a Jewish friend that needs to borrow you. You are no longer Catholic. Non-denominational. And that was the beginning. But, you know, I did not know then that when I practiced and talked and chatted with this angel day and night, night and day, in the car, out of the car, all that I was having a conscious contact with God. I didn't know then that at the beginning of my sobriety, the habits of sobriety, the habits of spirituality had already been formed. I didn't know then that all those old guys, by the way, they found the lesbian. They found the friend of the friend that had the lesbian. They had a little, like, goop conscience about me, and they thought, well, you know, this is a hard life for a lesbian. This was 1969, so, you know, lesbians probably had a harder life. I don't know what the hell they're talking about. I had a great life, but they thought I had a hard life, and they wanted this lesbian to talk to me about, now that I'm sober, and I have so much potential, and all that stuff, and I was only, like, 22 years of age, sober, beginning to uncrink from the, you know, the being all messed up, and starting to speak normally, and all that kind of stuff, that I was kind of okay, and that she should talk to me and convince me that now that I'm sober, I don't need to be a lesbian. And because it's such a tough life. And if you're a lesbian, of course, well, you're never going to have any self-worth. And, well, Christ, you're never going to have a Mercedes. And, you know, you're never going to have money. You're going to be struggling your whole goddamn life. Who's going to take care of you? And I don't know how to type. So I was really a mess. I mean, they said to me, can you type? I said, type? What's the matter with these people? So my mother used to say, if you don't know how to type, you're not going to survive in the world. Now, let me tell you, it's not year 2000. I got a computer, and I refuse to hit the keys because I still don't know how to type. I'm getting over that, though. I'm, like, maturing about it. I'm going to practice, okay? But do you know how to type, the guy says to me. I said, why the hell would I ever need to know how to type, for Christ's sake? I made more money last year. But, you know, let's not go there. You know how to type. They were trying to tell me that, you know, lesbians are going to have a rough life. You're going to be like, have nobody that's going to love you because it's going to be very limited and what have you, and they're probably all drunks. Because, you know, if you're a lesbian, you're bound to be an alcoholic because you're all screwed up, so why not drink? I don't know what their thinking was, but it was very limited. And they tell me that, you know, they have found a woman that's going to talk to me. Now, I love them for that. I love them for finding a friend of a friend that was a lesbian to talk to the little lesbian that's there with all the prisoners, the suits, and the rest of them, and Tex down at the hole in the ground. So I shoot off to Beverly Hills to meet with this lesbian. They picked the wrong person. She was one of the most successful women in the city. She's all messed up. She's trying to tell me, like, this is not the life. I said, what the hell's the matter with you? You got the life I want. I want what you have. You know, I couldn't believe it. And I went back and I said, what are you guys, nuts? But I understood the love. I understood the love. And then the lesbian did show up. She was sober a little longer than me, and oh, it was wonderful. She broke all the rules, and we both stayed sober. I couldn't believe it. I said, you're not supposed to do this. I'm a newcomer. Jesus. I'm not supposed to be the person telling you, don't slam me up against the wall here. I'm a newcomer. And anyway, I'm a slammer. Don't slam me. I should be slamming you. Now, when I'm sober long enough to know that I'm a slammer, I'll do it. But until then, you could mess me up. We became dear friends. She gave me my first 12 and... I don't know where I'm doing the story. 12 and 12, my One Day at a Time book. She's passed away since then, Amy A. And we became great friends, and we educated all those Texas and prisoners in suits about lesbianism. And 30 years later, I have not benefited. I have more self-worth than the average person, I think, inside of me, because I deserve it. Because I have a God that tells me every day, I accept you and I accept myself. I have friends around me that love me and accept me. I have a very good life. The quality of my life is good. The quantity of my life for years was excellent. The quantity. And ridiculous. It's about the quality. And that's what it's about in AA. Today, it says here, a new beginning, a new millennium. I've been looking at it. It's a great logo. It's great everything. I can't do a God, there goes the statter. I can't even say the bloody word. A new beginning and a new day. I can do today. I can do today really well. Every one of you in this room can do the day really well. I'm safe today. I'm safe today because I have finally got it that AA provides you with the perimeters within which to live your life so that you'll never get hurt again. You'll never be alone again, and you'll always have a home. But it's within the parameters of the steps that that fence is built. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous can build a pasture for you. And it will build a pasture. And going to all those meetings will be the pasture. And putting out those coffees and having a meeting start every night at 8 o'clock and Friday nights and all the Lambda meetings and all the wonderful things that are going on. All these are available for you in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a big pasture. And in the pasture, you'll kick each other around and you'll love each other and you'll care for each other and you'll see an odd cow. Okay, but... and you'll find out all these things. But if you want to build a fence within which you will stay within this pasture for the rest of your life, well, then that's going to have 12 strong posts. And nobody, nobody can do that for you. They can tell you how. They did it. They can suggest that you do it. They can tell you it's a spiritual program, that it's a spiritual pasture. They can tell you that there's a million suns and a million gods and a million stars and one belongs to everybody and we all fit. They can tell you that it's broad and inclusive and tremendous. They can tell you that the great reality is deep within each and every one of us. But they can't work the steps for you. And if you're hanging around with people that don't talk about God and talk about the steps, move on. Because the faster you get it, the better. And if you can't find anybody, do it yourself with your best friend. Read the book again tomorrow. Read it as a sober person. Read it as someone that needs to live. You will be astounded at how spiritual it is. You'll be astounded. I am astounded every single time I look at the book, which is every month we read a chapter. Practice that. You'll be astounded. And then you're going to be knocked out when you find out about the steps. Or you're going to be unhappy when you find out that it's really hard to work just one. Don't wait 18 years to find that out. Don't use them as band-aids. If somebody says to you, what step are you working on? See, I'm working on all of them, but I'm about at 6 on the way to 7. I just left 5. You can't get to 2 if you don't do 1. You can't get to 3 if you don't do 1 and 2. And you can't get to 4 if you do 1, 2, and 3, etc. You can't. And if you do, well, I think the quality is just lacking. You're going to end up having to do it again anyway, so you might as well do it this. You can't put your hand in a glass of water and leave a hole. They're all together, the steps. Changed my whole entire perception and belief about everything I have ever known, thought, saw, or touched. And now I know that the first step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're powerless over alcohol and that your life is unmanageable, in the first couple of years, you need to know that. You need to know that you can never drink again for the rest of your life. You need to know that, yes, how you do it is a day at a time, but you're here forever. You're here for many, whatever those are. You are here for a very long time. You can't have any reservation whatsoever. You can have no little doubt in the back of your mind, if she leaves me, if he leaves me, if this happens. No. You cannot drink no matter what. And there's enough of us around that have done it no matter what. When the people die, when there's great excitement and great sadness and great love, you live and you don't drink no matter what. You walk through the valley of the darkness no matter what. You will never be alone again no matter what. And then after a few years of understanding that in the deepest part of you, then you can say, I am powerless over everything else, and it makes my life unmanageable. And you'll be doing that for the rest of your life. For the rest of your life. But it is only when you know that you are so powerless, without any reservation whatsoever, that you need Alcoholics Anonymous and the meetings. If you're going to drink, you're going to leave the meetings. You could be leaving the meetings right now in your mind. You could say, who the hell is she anyway? Beginning of trouble. Thinking like that about me, first of all. But you can't leave Alcoholics Anonymous. They said to me, you can never drink again for the rest of your life, and you have to go to meetings for the rest of your life, and I believe it. I believe it. I believe it because I would forget. I believe it because I would forget right away. It would be very short. And if I stop coming to these meetings and I don't listen for the similarities and I don't reach out and I don't care, then pretty soon I'm not going to come into the meetings. I'll have a cigarette outside. And then I'll have stay in the parking lot, and then I won't leave the house. And before you know it, I will just be another faded memory in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what happens. That's what happens. And is it because, I don't know what it is. I know it's a spiritual deficiency. I know it's because the God thing isn't there. No, I drank because whatever. No, you drank because you don't trust God. You drank because you don't have a God. You drank because you're using God for nothing. You drank because you expect somebody else to do it for you. You drank because you didn't stay for your own bloody miracle. And thank God if you're back. Thank God you came back. Thank God you came back. We only know about the people that come back. We don't know about the people that don't come back. You know, do you learn more from the people that are here or the people that are gone? No, the people that are here, the people that live every day, the people that fall down and get up, fall down and get up, fall down and get up, and don't drink no matter what. The people that come to the meetings no matter what. The people with all those years that still put the sugar out. The people that are on these committees that year after year after year that continue to do. That's who you learn from. What you learn from the people that went out is they turned their back on their God. Did their God turn their back on them? No. They turned their back on God. I did that sober. Going to the meetings. Regular attending of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I turned my back on my God. I used my God like a band-aid. Only for the crises. And I had to be battered on that wall. That jaywalker story is me sober. Now I read the book, I read about the jaywalker, and think that's me sober. I read about all those other people and they're about me. I don't identify when I was drinking. I identify now. I mean, how many times have you done it? Gone back, gone back, gone back, gone back, gone back? No different than the truck. The first step is the most important step of them all. Because you have to know that you're an alcoholic and you cannot drink again for the rest of your life. And then you can go on to the second step. And if you go to enough meetings and put out your hand enough and make enough coffee and drink enough coffee and do enough service and do whatever, you will come to believe because you will see miracles that are not your own, and you're more inclined to see miracles in other people before you can accept that you're a miracle too. And you're going to come to believe in a power greater than yourself. And that power is going to rebalance you, take you back to sanity. I don't have time to go into detail. The first step is the step of grace honesty. You must be honest enough to know that you can never drink again for the rest of your life. How you do it is a day at a time. Only then can you move on to the second step, the step of hope. And that hope will restore that power and give you the power. So first you're powerless and then you get the power back. And then if you have enough honesty and you have enough hope, you will be able to make the decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God and turn that over. Turn it over. Every little trouble, every little thought, every little inconvenience, everything you don't understand, everything that hurts you, everything that anything, you will make a decision, and the decision is very important. And it's your will that will help you make that decision. So don't buy this crap. It has not been my experience that we have no will. Our will is bad. My will is what has me here in Phoenix tonight. My will is what makes me make the decision every day. I have taken back my will in cooperation with my God. It is a huge advantage. And I make that decision. And if you have enough honesty in the first step and enough hope to get that power back, then you have enough faith to make that decision. And only then will you have enough courage to go to four. So don't rush. So when you're powerless, you can get the power in two, and you can make a decision to activate that power. And if you're really good at this, you'll be able to activate that power from unmanageability to insanity. And if you're not really good at it, well, you'll go right insane and you'll mess up a lot of things. But it doesn't matter. That's how you know to do it. So making mistakes is absolutely wonderful in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's how you learn. It's how you do it. Within the pastures of AA, that's how you put those stakes in the ground and say, this is my leaning post. I have this honesty of one, and I know that I am powerless and unmanageable. And then you put another stake in the ground and you say, and now I know how it feels. Feelings are facts. How it feels to have this power and this hope. And then you can go and put the next stake in that fence, and you can put one down and you can say, and now I have the faith to make that decision to ask God for that help. And then you put down the next stake, and it'll be the stake of courage. Because you have enough honesty and hope and faith, you'll get the courage. It comes with it. It's part of the deal. It's a guarantee. It's a promise. It's all over the literature. It's all out of the mouths of people that have done it before you. The experience speaks for itself. And you take this courage and you look at your fears and you take a fact-finding and fact-facing inventory. It doesn't say emotional drama that I'm going to kill myself with. It just says fact-finding and fact-facing. And in the first couple of years, you do it just as whatever sponsor you've got tells you to do. And then after that, you start looking at those fears, because fear is the root of it all. You look at your fears, and you'll be able to do it. You know, somebody said, what's the difference between 4 and 10? Well, my experience is that if you think about the problem a lot, it's 4. If it happens every now and then, it's 10. The nature of your wrong is like if it's all the time. And if you have enough honesty and hope and faith and courage, you will be given enough integrity to listen to somebody's truth when you read this inventory to them and to tell them your truth. And it will be so profound an experience. And they will say to you, we love you. And they'll comfort you. And that's all you can do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Open your arms, comfort the people, love them and say, it's okay. It's okay. Doesn't say in the book we can throw you out. It's okay. Then you have somebody that has enough, I had enough honesty, enough hope, enough faith, enough courage, and enough integrity to do something that was so profound. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, the sixth step is so misunderstood. It's worth it tonight. I don't have time to discuss it, but it's worth it to go home and to read the sixth step in the 12 and 12. And you will be shocked when it says, God will not render you white as snow without your cooperation. Because when it's time for you to get to the sixth step, well, you know, you're finished now being carried on the wings of the dove that floats around Alcoholics Anonymous. You've just been dropped in the ground and you have to stand up and walk like the rest of us. And you're going to need the sixth step. And you're going to need to cooperate with God, and you're going to need to do it intentionally. And in order to do that and become entirely ready, you're going to have to accept yourself. And that's what the magnificence is of the inventories and why you should learn to love them. Because the more you know about yourself and you read these inventories in five and you discuss them with someone else, well, the more you'll accept yourself. And you know what happens when you accept yourself? The seventh step, the step of humility, absolutely takes you over. It takes you over. I don't know how to describe it to you. It's like one day you're here and the next day you just step somewhere else. You're just there, and you know that behind you is the power of God, and all there is, and all the gods, and Anthony, and Joseph, and everybody, and they're all there, and that the grace of God will never take you where the grace of God cannot keep you, and you will know that. because you accept yourself. And you will have this sense of honesty and hope and faith and courage and integrity and acceptance and humility. And it is only then, after you're sober a few years, really, that you'll be able to look around and say, who have I hurt? And you're sober. And the compassion of eight will overcome you. And the justice, the equaling of the scales, the ability to walk down the street and never be afraid to look over your shoulder, knowing that you're free, knowing that you're not afraid of anybody, knowing that you can go and do and be anybody you want, is the benefit of the eighth and the ninth step. A large part of that eighth and ninth step for me these days is the necessity for me to amend how I think about you so that I can diminish the level of judgment and worry that is in me. Diminish that. The more I diminish the judgment, the more self-worth I have. The more I diminish the judgment, the more self-worth. And 8 and 9 helps me with that. So with enough honesty and with enough hope in 2, enough faith in 3, enough courage from the fearlessness of 4, enough integrity in 5, enough acceptance of only yourself in 6, enough humility automatically and freely given by just asking for it, you don't have to do a thing. Nothing. In fact, it's preferable to do nothing. You delay the process if you help. Your job is to just do 1 through 4, meet with somebody for a little advice in 5, and then take care of your own positioning before your God in 6, and then stop and pause. As Jane said in her workshop today, a pause where the spirit world lives, where all there is that will heal you is between the intake and the outtake of your breath. A pause. And that's what 6 is. The place where you pause with yourself, and then God comes in 7 and heals you. It is impossible not to be healed. Why is it impossible? It promises us in the book. Clearly states a couple of times, I think about 3, I'm not 100% sure about that, that if God can do for you the absolute removal of the disease, the terminal disease of alcoholism, if it can take you off a bathroom floor and stand you in Phoenix, Arizona, why would this God, why would this process, why would this belief, why would this healing not work in absolutely every single solitary area of your life? I added a few words, but go find that in the big book. You'll be shocked. It's definitely in there. Allah, every problem is a spiritual problem, and every solution is a spiritual solution. Powerless. 2 gives me the power. 3, I activate that power by making a decision. 4, I look at the fears that block that power from getting to my healing. 5, I say to somebody else, have I thought of everything? Is it okay? Am I ready? Have I made enough room for God? 6, I say, God, I have done all I know to do. Now I will step aside and put myself in front of you, and God will automatically take over. And then I look around and see, how can I continue to have this channel remain clear? Because if I cast a shadow in my light, it is my shadow. It is not your shadow. And I am back to 10, the walk around step, the step where you got to walk around every day. And what does it say in 10? Somebody said to me once, you need to take a 10th step. How do you do that without not saying, oh my God, I have been powerless. I need the power back. I better make that decision. What was in the way? I have to talk to somebody on the phone. I accept that. Please help me. I won't do that to you again. I was a little nuts when that happened to me. And I'm back to 10. You have to be able to do that like that. You have to be able to do it when the car cuts you off on the freeway. You have to be able to do it when somebody steps on your toe. You have to be able to do it when somebody throws up on your shoe in a meeting. You have to be able to do that like that. So you can't just do 10. You have to do all 10 to get to 10. And then you have to say, what is this? They call it the, you know what they call in the book? New mistakes. Why are they new? You already gave them away. Why are they new? You took them back. Well, once you give something to the spiritual universe, you do not get it back. It is new the next time you do it. So when you act like an asshole tomorrow, you are a new asshole. So don't go blaming anybody in AA or in the world or in your job or in your relationship because you're a problem. God healed you. You took it back. you have to do it all again. But you know, to give you some peace and serenity is the 11th step. It's so magical, this prayer thing. Because don't forget, none of you would be in this room with me tonight, and I wouldn't be here with you if we hadn't desperately wanted a God in our lives. If we hadn't in a state of unconsciousness prayed. So why don't we now pray openly, consciously? Conscious contact with God. The angel worked. It was the greatest year of my life, my first year of my sobriety. I turned everything over. I believed in miracles. I saw them. I hate the word reborn. It's so Christian. But I was revitalized, recreated, restored. And then I took over for a bunch of years. Well, guess what? It's never too late. I am restoring and recreating myself now in cooperation with my God. And how do I do it now? Well, I learned the hard way. And you don't have to. I used to call God up and say, I am here at the gates of heaven. And I have this elephant of a problem. And this is how I think you should fix it. I have a list of things we need to do. And everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous would say, wow, you know, you really work a great program. Why was I dark? Why didn't I believe anymore? I worked such a great program. Why didn't it fix me all those things that are supposed to fix me? Why? I never turned myself over to God. Well, I was trained to turn myself over to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was afraid to turn myself over to God. The 11th step is a step where you have a conscious contact. I turn myself over to a fake, make-believe, wonderful, spiritual, gigantic angel. But I wouldn't turn myself over to God or the universe or the spiritual universe or anything. I turn myself over to candles and mantras and the Maharishi and all kinds of crap. But I wouldn't turn myself over to God. And my concept is far different than it was then of what this God is. And now I know what I was doing wrong. And that's what my experience is to tell you about me. I now ask questions and I don't wonder about the answer. I used to say, I've turned it all over to God for the results. However, I'm helping. Now I just say, what do you want me to do? Every night, for maybe 3 years, I wrote a Dear God letter. Dear Great Spirit, what do I do about this? Now I write it every other night. I write it in the daytime. I write it every few days. I write in a column of a newsletter. I write wherever, whenever I'm troubled about anything. And what do I write? I don't even write the problem. God knows the problem. Been on my mind probably for a day before I write it. Dear God, Great Spirit, I use initial, DGS, quicker. Can't, see over your shoulder at Starbucks either, so DGS. What do I do? How do I do it? When do I do it? How should I do it? Should I call? Should I not call? Are you there? How am I going to know? When will you tell me? What do I do? When? How? With? Where? When? Should I? Every question I can think of. Thank you. I need and love you, Lila. And I throw it in the trash and I step aside because I now know how powerful that is. I now know that if you have the courage to go home, read the chapter of the agnostics and the sixth step and the seventh step and the 12th step and the 12 and 12, and start writing those questions, get ready. If it all happened to you at once, you'd be written up in the newspaper for Phoenix, Arizona, it's wherever you are. It's a huge, monumental event. And somebody says, oh, it takes so long. Sometimes. Not always. The power of prayer. And how do you activate it? Well, regrettably, after you've asked those questions, you have to meditate. What does it mean, really? Oh, you can do 1,000 things. Climb mountains, you can blow out candles, you can do anything you want. It means that you have to be able to pause. Pause. I don't know how you pause. I don't know how you do nothing. Next is I can't say that staying sober is a difficult thing for me anymore. I mean, it's the joy of my life. But next to staying sober at the beginning in the first few weeks, doing nothing is the single hardest thing I've ever had to do in my sobriety. And still remains to be so today. to pause is the single hardest thing I've ever had to do, and continue to have a difficult time with it. So I use the serenity prayer to just tune myself in. And I, because of the serenity prayer, I can focus. I pause and meditate in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings because I love to listen. And because I hear the words, I like the sounds. I like the sounds of the coffee. I like the sounds of the people. I like the sounds before the meeting, during the meeting, and after the meeting. And I meditate, and it's calming to me. And I do nothing about my problem. I do nothing. And you know what happens? They all get solved. The dots are all connected. I bump into somebody that tells me something. I see it. I hear it. And a week or three later, I'm talking to somebody, and I'm saying, you know what, da-da-da-da. And I don't even realize all the coincidences that have occurred. I'm given everything I could possibly want. It's right in front of me. And it is just in the last few years that I have enough self-worth to begin to ask my God for help. So people say don't ask for anything. Well, I don't know who they are. I ask for everything. And if I'm not supposed to get it, I'm not going to. And if I am, I'll be ready for it. The thing I ask for the most is that I can continue to feel with the expansion that I have begun to feel. That the spiritual awakening that comes from having enough honesty, hope, faith, integrity, courage, acceptance, humility, compassion, justice, that sense of balance, that it's fair for both of us, perseverance in 10, spirituality in 12, and the great act of service in, spirituality in 11, and the great act of service in 12, that you can have something happen to you that involves a God you can't even describe. You see, I no longer believe. I believe that it's all possible. Jesus, Mary, Joseph, whatever. They're all there. So is my brother. So is my nephew. So are my uncles. So are Jane's grandmothers. So are my grandmothers. So be it. They're all there. They're all equal. It's all that energy. It's all that information. I avail myself of it. There's times when I feel that I'm here on this earth and I can just reach through the air and shake hands with all there is. I know the people. I can't wait to see them again. But I'm not in a hurry. They can't wait to see me. But they're not in a hurry for me either. Because you don't leave one day sooner than you are supposed to. And for all the people that have gone on, well, I don't understand it. But I know they went willingly with their God, no matter how they went. And I know that they are there to look down upon me so that when I say, I need to sleep, I'm troubled, I'm worried, what do I do? How do I do it? I don't have to worry. They're rushing to help me. They're rushing. They're tripping over each other to come and help me. They're falling over each other. I got enough people up there to trip over each other. And they're coming. They're coming from generations of people I have never met that I belong to, that I come from, that are connected to me, that have bumped into me, that are connecting the dots for me. They're rushing to help me. I believe that. How does somebody that wakes up on the bathroom floor, a drunk woman, lesbian, alcoholic, end up strictly because of the concepts and the beliefs and the broadness of the interpretation of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 and 12 and the magnificence of the people who are willing to share? How do I end up believing in something that is so vast and so big that it will take lifetimes for me to even feel it all? It's extraordinary. You can't even explain the spiritual awakening in step 12. How do you explain that in a way that people don't think you're some kind of nut? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of what? Putting out the coffee? No. You're just putting out the coffee so you can learn to belong. You're having conventions so you can feel like you're part of something. We're all going to meetings so we can feel connected. So that you will feel safe enough to someday say, I will make the decision to take the walk, the spiritual walk, that I am destined to make. I have crawled on my hands and knees, and now I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to reach out, and I'm going to ask that God to to come with me. I am ready. I am ready to go. I am a sober woman, lesbian, member of Alcoholics Anonymous, member of the world. I am no better or no worse than anyone else. I am ready to live. Will you help me? What do I have to do? And you will be told that you have to do the steps and read this literature. And if you do what's possible, and that is possible for you, to take the time to do that in a very disciplined and practiced way, to work with people in Alcoholics Anonymous who want to talk about those steps, to go to meetings where they talk about God, to benefit from the exchange with people who have not more time. Sometimes we're impatient and impossible. But the willingness to talk about God, the willingness to talk about the steps, the willingness to say, I have come from an angel to all there is, the willingness to not be embarrassed by that, the willingness to face their God head on and your God, the willingness to love you even if you're a whatever. I mean, I had a guy call me from Cleveland, Ohio that's a Martian. I was curious what kind of God Martians have. He's got a God that makes the Jehovah's Witness people look like they're like asleep. I love the guy. I love that he's a Martian. He hasn't called me in a couple of years. He must have taken off for Mars or something. And he's sober a lot of time. It's about the steps. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carry this message. What the hell is the message? God's waiting for you, and you're ready. God's waiting for you. Now, all the newcomers that are here, and the gentleman with the book, and all the people that are over there, we gave them the cups and t-shirts. Wear them in good health. Drink lots of coffee out of those cups. And for a lot of years, like two or three maybe, you're going to be under the umbrella of grace in Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you just go to meetings, it's going to be hard-pressed to do anything wrong. But after that, those of you that are 5 years sober or more, you're dragging your wheels. And one of the greatest character defects is sloth. And you don't deserve it. You chose to live. That's why you're here. And the courage it takes to embrace God, it's so big. Now, God's waiting for you, and whatever your God is waiting for you, and all there is waiting for you, and they're all waiting. And they're just waiting. And all you have to do is say, help me, period. I don't know what you're going to do, but I like to restore myself periodically. And before I came down tonight, I felt empty. And I got down on my knees at the end of the bed, and I said, help me. Guide my thoughts and my words and my deeds. And I had the best time tonight. I had the best time with the raffle, and I had the best time with my friend Marty. I am so honored that we were able to stand here together and give that young man a book. But more than that, I'll be honest with you. He didn't count as much as my standing with my friend. I hope you stay sober. But we're going to know each other for an eternity. And she's here. And we've walked the walk. And it's important to me. It's important to me. They say the newcomer is the most important person in the room. Not necessarily so for me. There's always going to be drunks. We're going to have plenty of newcomers. There's nowhere else to go, really. After they kick everybody out of the treatment centers and the hospitals, where do you get the coffee, the donuts, you know, where do they give away women at raffles? I mean, unbelievable. Thank you for allowing me to come to Phoenix. Thank you, Sandy, Sue for the airport, Tony for your graciousness, Jamie on the phone. Thank you to all of you for being so kind. Thank you.